Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias. Today is Sunday, February 25th, 2018, and this is show number 668. Well, I guess you could tell by last week's episode that I was so excited about my August smart lock that I told you the same story 2 weeks in a row. Now, I can't explain how I did that. Lately, things post as much as a week or two in advance on the blog before they show up in the podcast. I looked back at the previous week's blog post, and I didn't see August in the title, so I assumed I had not put it in the podcast yet. The problem was that I did talk about it on the show, but I'd forgotten to put it in the title of the blog post. That was the real mistake. Now, here's the second problem. We have a live chat audience on Discord at podfeet.com/chat who keeps me honest. Now, Steve monitors the chat while I'm recording. This allows him to keep an eye out for mistakes I'm making while I can't pay attention. He doesn't actually pay attention to me, but he pays attention to the chat, and they sometimes pay attention to me and catch me when I say dumb things. Lately, the chat has gotten really lively ever since we switched over to Discord, so it's a lot to keep up with. So anyway, Brett noticed I was recording the August story a second time, and he noted it in the chat room. Steve took a look and said he was mistaken, that Brett was thinking of the interview at CES we'd done with August a week or two before that. Sadly, Brett was right. I do have to say thanks to Brett for trying, and also to Kaylee, who tweeted me right after the show went up to tell me about my little boo-boo. I didn't go back and edit it because that's a big pain. It causes all kinds of anarchy because I have to remove the file from Libsyn. I got to replace it with the new file. And if your podcatcher had caught it already anyway, then it'll get weird because then the file won't be there when your podcatcher wants to get it. So it's like once a mistake is made, it's pretty much made. Anyway, this would not have been so bad if it hadn't happened in a 2-hour NoCillaCast. Like, you already had enough content. You didn't have to have all that thing in there that you'd already heard before. Well, anyway, I hope you guys took good use of the artisanally crafted chapter marks to pop right past the rerun story and move on to the next. Well, Steve and I are off on another one of our adventures in a few weeks with our good friends Dean and Suzanne. We met them when they crashed our 20th wedding anniversary dinner in Sedona, Arizona, and we've made a tradition of getting together every 5 years as a result. This year, Steve and I are celebrating 35 years of wedded bliss. Well, you know, mostly bliss. And so the four of us are going to Paris. We're pretty excited about it, but of course, we will not leave you high and dry without a NoCillaCast. The dulcet tones of Alistair Jenks of the Sitting Duck podcast will be filling in for me on the show that would normally come out on Sunday, March 11th. Since he lives in the future, since he's in New Zealand, it'll likely come out a day early. Bart Bouchatz has agreed to steward the NoCillaCast for the show that's normally on the 18th of March. There will be no NoCillaCast live on the 11th or 18th of March as a result. But you're welcome to go hang out with the friendly and enthusiastic NoCilla castaways in our Discord chat at podfeet.com/chat at 5 p.m. on any Sunday night. Heck, sometimes there's people in there in the middle of the week. Anyway, I'm pretty sure I'm not that instrumental to how much fun they have in there. I'm pretty sure I'm just the catalyst for you guys to hang out. Well, it also means that Chit-Chat Across the Pond will be taking a break for a while, probably starting back up the last week of March with an episode of Programming by Stealth. I hope you'll support the guys by sending in some audio reviews. That really helps them out. You can mail them to them directly at podcasting@butterfisser.net and alistair@jenks.net.nz. Of course, those links are in the show notes to send those directly to them if you can. Thanks in advance for helping them keep the ship afloat and the NoCilla castaways filled with geeky audio. This week's Chit Chat Across the Pond was finally a light version, and you really shouldn't listen to it. If you do, you might end up signing up to go to MacStock this year. I had Mike Potter on the show, who runs MacStock Conference and Expo, and we had a great talk about the improvements he's made to an already fantastic experience. We talk about the format of the technical presentations and about how the community feel of this show is like nothing else you have ever experienced. Ask Ian and his son Daniel. They'll tell you what it's like. Anyway, don't go listen to it in your podcatcher of choice under Chit Chat Across the Pond Light or in the full Chit Chat Across the Pond feed. Well, I've got a tiny tip for you this week. A few weeks ago, I was listening to the Clockwise podcast, and Micah Sargent briefly mentioned something about the sleep button on the Apple TV remote. I couldn't get it out of my head, wondering what he was talking about. What sleep button? Well, I figured out that what he'd mentioned was actually something pretty amazing. If you hold down the TV home button for a full second on the Siri remote, you know, the black one that comes with the more recent models of Apple TV, it'll pop up on screen an option to put the Apple TV to sleep. But that's not the cool part. Clicking on the sleep option will also turn off any connected devices. In our house, the sleep option turns off our big TV and the audiovisual receiver to which it's connected. I tested it on a different TV with a different AV receiver, and it worked there too. Now, I can't swear this will work for you for your setup, but you should give it a try. Now, we watch most things on our Apple TV these days, so it's an absolute delight to be able to shut down all of our components with that little remote that's already in my hand. Well, after I wrote this up, Jamie Cox made a comment on the blog that helps explain how this works. And you remember I said it may not work for you, but it worked for me. He said, for your Apple TV to control power to your TV or AV receiver, you may have to enable HDMI-CEC. That's High Definition Multimedia Interface Consumer Electronics Control. Just rolls right off the tongue. We'll call it CEC. Anyway, he goes on to say, on my AV receiver, you have to go into the settings and enable it individually for each HDMI input. If enabled, you should also be able to turn on the entire system with the Apple remote by pushing menu or home or play. Well, thank you so much for that clarification, Jamie, because it sort of magically worked for us with the new receiver that we had to buy when we bought the new 4K Apple TV. So I'm thinking CEC must have been enabled by default. And you're right. I can now turn on my TV and receiver using my Apple TV remote.
Hello, castaways. Terry Austin here with a brief review of my brand new keyboard. I recently found myself in need of a new wireless keyboard, and on the very reliable recommendation of the ineffable Jeff Gamet over at the Mac Observer, I went with the Matthias Wireless Aluminum Keyboard in Space Gray. That last bit was to match my MacBook Pro. This keyboard's got a few key features that make it invaluable for my home office. I'm a work-at-home professor who teaches college-level anatomy and physiology classes online. On top of that, I do some consulting work for a major publisher of higher ed textbooks. My workstation, frankly, is something of a geek's dream. I've got a 2017 15-inch MacBook Pro, a 4K 27-inch iMac, an iPad Pro, and an iPhone X. At various times of the day, I need to type on each of these devices, and that's where this Matthias wireless aluminum keyboard really shines. First, let's go over setup. Charge the battery. I plugged it into micro USB with the really nice right angle cord they gave. Charged it overnight. I believe they actually recommended about a 5-hour charge, but for me, overnight was easy because it arrived late in the afternoon on my doorstep. Why such a long charge, you might ask? Well, this thing's got a generous 1600 milliamp hour lithium ion polymer battery. The company website touts a range of between 533 and 1600 hours of continuous typing between charges. That varies depending on your typing speed, indicator lights that you used, etc. In short, with any luck, you might actually get a full year between charges, and in fact, that's exactly what the experience was reported from Jeff Gamet before I purchased mine. As the name would indicate, the top case is a gorgeous space gray aluminum that nicely complements my MacBook Pro. The bottom, which houses the generous battery, is plastic. This full-size keyboard has got all the keys that you might hope for. There is, of course, a full set of alphanumeric keys like any other keyboard. There are Mac-friendly function keys to handle screen brightness, volume, disk ejection. You can also toggle back to the standard function key with the FN key if you need to do that. And there's also a nicely sized functioning numeric keypad off on the right side. And the numb keypad has above it four buttons that make me extremely happy. They are numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they've got a cute little wireless symbol above each digit. These dedicated 1, 2, 3, 4 keys are for pairing up to 4 separate Bluetooth devices. You press and hold any one of those 4 buttons until they begin flashing blue, and that puts the keyboard in pairing mode. You pair your devices, and in order to switch to any device, you simply tap on the key that corresponds to that device. I've included a link in the show notes for the keyboard over on Amazon, using, of course, Amazon's affiliate code. I'm also including a picture of my workspace. I included that to point out a handy setup suggestion. As you can see in the image, if you're looking at it, my devices are laid out in their usual fashion from right to left on my workbench. There's the MacBook Pro, then the iPad Pro, followed by the iPhone X, setting out a nice little stand from Anchor. We might have a review on that later on. No promises, Allison. And then the iMac. The keys toggle the devices in that order. So number one goes to the MacBook Pro, number two to the iPad, number three to the iPhone, and number four to the iMac. Typing. Key travel is a satisfying deep touch with a nice firm feel. It's not mushy or clicky at all. I actually prefer the feel of this keyboard to the keyboard on my 2017 Touch Bar MacBook Pro. Oh, and there's a power switch on the front edge of the keyboard, but following Jeff's suggestion, after the initial setup, I pretty much ignore that power switch. The keyboard powers itself down after a few minutes of quiet time and powers back up whenever I start typing again. This is easily my new favorite keyboard, and if you're looking for one, you might consider giving it a try. It's currently selling over on Amazon for $112. It comes in space gray, silver, rose gold. That rose gold one is only $99 for some reason, and gold also for $99. Now, as an aside, Matthias apparently recently released a backlit version of the same keyboard that you might be interested in. I presume it's got pretty much exactly the same features. It looks identical in the photos. That one is a bit pricier, coming in at $159.99 on Amazon. It looks, for now, like the backlit version is only available in silver or space gray, but other colors may be available. I can't promise. I'll also include a link for that one in the show notes in case you like the backlit version better. But I haven't handled that one, and I'm likely not going to be doing so anytime soon. And now, with that review done, I believe Allison also mentioned a very special connection to this keyboard that she thought was pretty cool. I'll leave that one to her to tell you about, should she choose to. Hopefully, this has been helpful. I'll see you all online, and stay subscribed.
Well, hey, Terry, that was a fantastic review, and I got to tell you, the pictures of this Matthias keyboard are gorgeous. The space gray reminds me of the keyboard for the iMac Pro. It's that pretty. Now, Terry gave you a little bit of a tease at the end of this. If you've been around the NoSella cast for a very long time, you'll remember a fine gentleman named Tim Verporten. He ran the Mac Review cast and was a very dear friend, but sadly, he passed away around 5 years ago. After he passed, his wife Alice shipped all of his tech gear to Steve and me in hopes that we could sell it for her. One of the things I discovered about Tim was that he loved keyboards. I mean, it was an obsession. He had a lot of keyboards. One of the keyboards he had that we sold was a Matthias FK104 USB keyboard. Didn't look quite as cool as the new one Terry just reviewed, but hearing the name Matthias after all these years brought back fond memories of Tim. Well, that music must mean one thing. We've got another tiny tip. This one's really short, but it is probably my favorite thing I have figured out in a really long time. If you're a keyboard junkie, I bet it drives you nuts that when you try to close a window in which you don't want to save the file, you have to drag your cursor all the way up to the save window to hit the delete button. You can save with the enter key, but if you don't want to save, you have to use your mouse. Get this. When the save window comes up, hit Command Delete on your keyboard and you will successfully delete the unsaved file and get right back to work. Now, maybe you knew this one already, but it's new to me and it makes me unbelievably happy. Well, I just did my taxes and I gotta say, doing them really brought home to me how generous you guys are to use the Amazon affiliate links to buy products on podfeet.com. And to those of you who spend their hard-earned dollars by contributing directly to the show via Patreon. And I don't want to forget those of you who make one-time contributions via PayPal, because I got to see all of those too when I was working on my taxes. Seeing the money generated that almost offsets the cost of creating the podcast is really, really great. Without you guys, we definitely wouldn't be able to cover shows like CSUN's Assistive Technology, MacStock, and CES. So thank you to all of you who have pushed the big red button on the podfeed.com homepage that says support the show and found a way to contribute that's right for you and your family. You know, I'm a fiend at taking screenshots and annotating them. I've most recently told you about Team Paper Snap, which is a somewhat limited but still useful menu bar app for screenshots. Its big advantage is that it allows you to instantly upload to the web and copy the URL to your clipboard so you can insert the screenshot into any place that only allows text. As useful as that is, the annotation tools in it are really pretty limited. Well, Klaus Wolf tipped me off to what might be an even better app called Monosnap from monosnap.com. Monosnap is available for free for the Mac and Windows and has an in-app purchase option that seems useful enough that this could be a viable business. We like that in our apps, right? Well, on the Mac, Monosnap installs as a menu bar app, which for this kind of tool is really the best way. Monosnap can do the usual tricks of capturing an area, a window, or full screen. You can pull down on the menu bar app to invoke them, or you can use keystrokes, and the keystrokes can be changed in preferences. That's sort of the minimum we require from one of these apps. When you take a screenshot, sometimes it's a little bit tricky to grab exactly what you want on screen. With Monosnap, when you start to take a screen snapshot, you not only get a set of crosshairs that go top to bottom and left to right on the screen, which is great, but the corner you're grabbing even shows a little zoomed up magnified area to show you exactly where you're grabbing. In case this is helpful, it also shows you the exact coordinates of where your cursor is located on screen before you click. That can be helpful for web developers who are trying to find an exact location. Using Monosnap, you can actually find it. What you also do when you're clicking and dragging, you get a real-time readout of the area you're covering. This is really cool to me because I'm often trying to take two screenshots for the blog that are the same size. Monosnap would make this a lot easier. I can see exactly the dimensions. Another thing it does when you're taking the screenshot is, and actually whenever you're moving your cursor around, it shows you the hex code of the color over which you're hovering before you click and drag. Now, that hex code can be useful for a lot of things. I recently was signing up for some service where I wanted to put my logo on it, and then it said I could theme it with a color. Well, I just turned on Monosnap. I hovered over the blue in the background of my my logo for podfeet.com, or, you know, for the NoSilicast, I should say, and it showed me the color. I hit Command-C, and I had copied that hex code, and I was able to plop it right into the service. Not something you do all the time, necessarily, but if you are a web developer or sometimes you do need to know the hex code of a color, it's right there. It's a color picker ready for you right there. You get that for free. Well, one more thing comes up while you're taking a snap, and that's a list of key options you can hold down to change the snap as you take it. So let's say we're taking the standard freeform snap, invoking Monosnap with the standard keystroke they give us, which is Command Option 5. There's a little pop-up that tells you to simply click if you want to snap a window. It also says if you hold down the Command key, you'll get a delayed snap. This is really handy if you're trying to record a pull-down menu, for example. Monosnap gives you a 5-second countdown, which I think is a perfect amount of time. There are even more options available to you on this initial snap. When you start a snap, one of the options shown is to use Option Click to record a window, or just Option Alone to record an area. The cool part of Monosnap is you don't have to remember these keystrokes because they show on screen when you start any app. The other cool thing about Monosnap is if you don't like all these recommendations, like you don't want to be told what the keystrokes are all the time, or you don't like seeing the hex code, or you don't like seeing the magnifier thing, you can turn all that off in Preferences. I think it's fantastic, but if you don't like it, you can turn it off. Now, have you ever made a screen snapshot and wished you could add another shot to the same image? In the Monosnap tool, there's a little camera in the upper left with a plus on it that does exactly that. It's crazy cool. It drops the image below the first one, but you can grab it and drag it around so it's on top of the original snap and change the size of the second snap. So cool. Well, once you take a screenshot, you get a dark floating window on screen with lots of options for annotations. Now, I've been using Preview for a long time to annotate screenshots for the website, but I hate that when you drop in an arrow, it just plops it into the middle of your screen and you have to spend time moving both ends. Monosnap's arrows work properly. You click and drag to the point to point at the thing you want to highlight. Just click, drag, done. Want to draw the arrow from head to tail or tail to head instead? Simply hold down Command when you click and drag, and of course that tooltip comes up. One of the limitations of Team Paper Snap is that the colors are predefined and they're kind of a pastel palette, which really doesn't pop for screenshots. I like, you know, bright red and bright blue. It's not really my style to go with pastels. With MonoSnap, you've got a default of 6 electric colors from flaming pink to bright yellow, plus black, gray, and white, and also a standard color tool to get access to any color you want. Right next to the color option is a slider for the thickness of the lines. I've come to expect that option, but it also works on any line annotations after the fact, so you can tailor each annotation as you need it. Now, of course, you need a box tool, too. With MonoSnap, when you select the box, it has a pop-up telling you to hold down the Shift key, which would make it a square, but also that if you hold down Command, you'll get a filled rectangle. I have to say, in preview, I get so weary of switching between those options in other tools. But MonoSnap has another trick up its sleeve. If you hold down the Option key, instead of drawing a colored rectangle, it highlights the area you select, slightly darkening the rest of the snapshot. And again, that's in a pop-up, so you don't have to remember the keystrokes. I got to tell you, I need all the help I can on this whole memory thing, so I really love the little tooltips. But again, you can turn them off in preferences if you don't like them. Now, lines can be held every 45 degrees by holding down the Shift key, and ovals become circles with the Shift key. There's a free-form pen tool. Actually, I think they call it a brush, but it becomes a highlighter if you hold down Command. I was going to say the only thing I wasn't wild about in MonoSnap was that the text always has a white highlight around it, which bugs me. I can't stand that look. But then I noticed that in the color selection tool, there's a toggle to turn off highlight/shadow. Now, that's important. It's one button, but it does two different things. In this case, it's getting rid of the white highlight around your text. I'll come back to that shadow thing in a minute. One of the common things you do when you add an arrow as an annotation is also to include some text to explain that thing you're pointing to. With MonoSnap, there's a separate button with text and an arrow built into one object. When you draw the arrow, it immediately waits for you to enter text. After you've placed the arrow, if you move the arrow around, grabbing either end, the text moves with the arrow. The text even takes up a new position. If you rotate the arrow too far, it'll flip over to the other side. I've never seen a tool with this feature before. I love it. Now, I mentioned using Preview, and I hate that it doesn't have a blur tool. I mess around with grabbing the background color with the color picker, drawing a rectangle over the thing I want to blur, then changing the box to have a solid background and making it the color I just chose. This process is very time-consuming, and the end result is that the covered-up information has disappeared. This could be misleading. You'd often rather show that the information is there, but I've just obfuscated it from view. MonoSnap has a simple blur tool that looks like a water droplet that blurs just as you'd like. There's a crop tool that's really obvious, but when I used it, it let me crop larger than my screenshot area. That got me to wondering, could I draw outside of the screenshot area too? Yep, you can, and it automatically increases the size of the screen snapshot to accommodate your drawing. I can't tell you how many times I've cropped something and then realized I need more room for my annotations. So you can have these annotations just floating out in space on either side of the snapshot you took, and they are included now in this larger image. There's even a resize image tool where you can maintain the current proportion or go nuts with freeform. You can type in the numbers. Let's say you just don't have enough options for annotating with MonoSnap and you want to edit with another tool. In the bottom right of the window is an external editor button. By default, it's set to preview, which has nothing to add to what MonoSnap can do. I mean, I think it's got a thought bubble is probably the only thing it can do. But in MonoSnap preferences, you can select any of the editors you have on your Mac. I changed mine to my beloved Clarify, of course. You can tell the MonoSnap developer spent a lot of care on the design of this tool because when you change editors, the icon in the bottom right changes to the logo of your preferred editor. Now, I think I've established that MonoSnap has every annotation you'd ever want on a single screen snapshot. But what can you do with your masterpiece when you're done annotating? Well, you can simply save the image, and by default, it will save into your pictures folder in a MonoSnap folder that it creates. On the right side of the MonoSnap window is a little handle sticking out that says Drag Me. If you drag that little handle, the window disappears and you can drag onto your desktop or into a folder, or you can drag it into a mail, or I've been dragging it into my blogging software. You can drag it anywhere you want, and it's automatically saved to that location. Now, I'm probably most of the time a little more of a click save button kind of person, but if you like to drag and drop, this couldn't be easier. Nowadays, we often like to save to cloud storage. With Monosnap, you can save to Monosnap server for free or save it right to iCloud Drive. Or you can tweet, Facebook, or email it right from the main window. Not enough options? How about SFTP or FTP to your own server? Or maybe you want to send it to a web dev server. How about Amazon S3? I mentioned up front that Monosnap had an add in-app purchases as an option. All of the save options I have already described to you are now free, but for $5, you can enable Google Drive, Dropbox, Evernote, Box, Yandex Disk, I've never heard of that, and Cloud App. I told you the business model made sense. All this goodness only $5 to have your own options for storage. By the way, it's not $5 for each one of those. It's $5 for all of them. I mentioned up front that the best part about TeamPaper Snap was that when you created a snapshot and uploaded it to their servers, you could immediately paste a pre-copied link into any place you needed to link to the image. If you create a free account for Monosnap, you can have the default behavior that when you hit to save to Monosnap, you automatically get that URL. By the way, the Monosnap terms and conditions, George from Tulsa read them, and he read one part and I read a different part. It turns out the free account is really not for businesses. They don't want like a whole business all of a sudden uploading everything in a company. So if you're doing it for business, you probably want to use one of the other servers. But if you're doing it for your own personal fun, then you don't need to worry about that. Anyway, read the terms and conditions if you care. Now, I thought I was getting near the end of the review, but after I created my Monosnap account, things went up a serious notch. Saving also opens the image on monosnap.com, but it's not just a one-time URL. You get a whole little files area in which you can create folders and sort your images. You can upload more images from the web's interface directly, not even using Monosnap. There's a button to upload from a URL, but that didn't work when I tested it. But get this. Once you've uploaded an image to your Monosnap directory, you can download it, you can resnap it, or you can embed links for it. Maybe that doesn't excite you as much as it does me, but having an image embed tag is very cool. It also has BB code option or even Bart's beloved markdown. They've also got a short link generator to get people directly to that image. And in fact, that's how I found out about this was because when Klaus sent an image to me, he sent it in a short link. And when I hit it, it took me to Monosnap. That's how I figured out what it was. Anyway, after creating my Monosnap account, I noticed the little lightning bolt icon on my menu bar was showing me a pop-up. It was alerting me to the fact that I can simply drag any image from my Mac onto the icon and it will be uploaded to my Monosnap account. As soon as it goes up, the URL for it is instantly copied to your clipboard, ready to paste anywhere you like. How cool is that? Now, guess what else? It can do video. I have to say, it really beat my expectations on video. I thought it would just let me record the whole screen or a single window, but it also lets you include your webcam in a little corner of the screen that you can move around and resize so you get picture in picture. It shows it to you real time so you can see how you're going to look on screen. I was able to set the frame rate, the recording quality, whether to capture the mouse cursor and clicks, and to change my audio input. You can add two inputs, by the way. So if you use the right kind of tools, you could actually have audio saved from Safari and audio from your mic at the same time. While recording, I could add real-time arrows and boxes to point at things on screen while I was recording the video. And clicking the annotations button, again, made them disappear. Actually, I think I thought that at first, and I think it might be like just after 4 seconds, it disappears. Just a few seconds, it just kind of goes away. Anyway, I was able to pause while recording, which is really useful to let you gather your thoughts if you're teaching something, and then easily stop the recording when you're done. I uploaded a little video to monosnap.com, then in my folder of items, I selected the video from that screen, and a nice little iframe embed code came up. I was able to plop that video into WordPress, and it worked perfectly, so you can watch a dumb little video I made over on podfeet.com. Now, I thought I should end the review of Monosnap with all of the things I don't like about this tool. There's only one thing. The Monosnap window background is black, the text field at the top to rename the file before saving is black, and the buttons are black with a slight shadow to show their buttons. It's beautiful and elegant, but it causes one problem. It's very hard to find where on this window I can click with my cursor to drag the window around. There's this tiny little sliver between the add screenshot button and the text field that you have to select. And I never hit it on the first try. I usually end up in the title field's text entry field instead. But you know what? after I wrote up this review, I ended up deciding to do a video tutorial for Screencast Online about Monosnap. It's not going to come out for, I don't know, 3 or 4 more weeks. But while I was working on that, I ended up chatting with the developer a lot. And he was the most responsive developer I have ever worked with. And, you know, I've got some friends now in the development community. Anyway, I told him about my complaint about this, that little sliver was the only spot I could get into. And he goes, oh, yeah, we're fixing that. We're making that bigger. So the only thing I didn't like, he's making even better. And there's way more about this tool I haven't even told you, because when I started working on the video, I started digging into every preference and every little thing this thing could do. And it is, if anything, I love it more than I did when I started. Monosnap is insanely capable. It's free. And if you want to give them $5, you can store your data in the cloud service of your choosing. I got to tell you, I gave them $5 just for their awesomeness. Well, okay, I promise this is the last tiny tip of this episode. As you may recall, I mentioned earlier about how to put your Apple TV and all connected components to sleep with the one button press on the Apple TV remote. Well, in the blog post, I included a screenshot of the Apple TV screen. And I thought you might be wondering, how did she capture her Apple TV screen? If you've ever tried to do it with your phone, it's ridiculous. Like, you get all this keystoning and it's all lame and you get like the Sony logo in the picture or something. But that's not how I did it. I recorded it directly. So here's what happened. The other day, I launched QuickTime and my iPhone attached via USB in preparation to make a recording of the screen for my latest Screencast Online video. Well, in QuickTime, you can choose New Movie Recording, and then next to the little record button, you'll see a downward chevron, and that allows you to choose the available video sources, like my phone. I wanted to select the iPhone and make it become a video source to other applications, such as ScreenFlow. But when I went into QuickTime settings and I dragged that little arrow down, I noticed that my Apple TVs were in the list of video sources. Well, that had to be tested, right? When you select the Apple TV as a video source, on the Apple TV, you'll be asked, do you want to allow screen sharing? To proceed, you select allow. I selected the Apple TV 4 in my room, and sure enough, I was able to see the Apple TV screen displayed on my Mac in QuickTime. For a brief second, I thought this would be a cool way to watch TV on my Mac, but it's clumsy because you have to use the Apple TV remote pointed at the TV, which has to be on, so like, why not watch the TV? Because it's right there in the room with you, right? Now, you also might be thinking this would be a terrific way to record TV shows, say, from Netflix on the Apple TV to your Mac. Well, of course, the copy protection people are smarter than that. As soon as you go into something like Netflix, the screen goes black in QuickTime. I was able to record the audio by setting that source to the Apple TV, but it was choppy as it was recorded as well. Oddly, it automatically enabled closed captioning so I could tell what I was supposed to be listening to, but the audio wasn't any good. So this would have been a cool feature, but, you know, abusers have made sure we can't have nice things. But I have to say, if you're trying to write to a developer to show them how their Apple TV app is misbehaving, or you want to help a remote family member navigate the settings on their Apple TV, this might be a cool way to capture the video or just a screenshot. As an example, I made a 19-second silent video demonstrating how to check for a software update on Apple TV, and I embedded it in the show notes. Everybody with a smartphone knows that protecting your device in a nice case is a good idea, and most people equate protection of their phone with OtterBox. But I'm here in the Otter booth, and I'm really glad I stopped by, because when I think of OtterBoxes, I think of these big tank covers that look like you should be in your Jeep and your truck with your belt on and the whole thing. But these are really, really beautiful cases we're seeing here. So I'm talking to Beau Pascal, and he's going to tell us about the new case lines.
So we are really trying to branch out. OtterBox has always been known as kind of the more rugged case. Everyone's very familiar with our belt clip. It's more for outdoors, but we are finally branching out. This is called our symmetry style, so it's going to be a little more slim, streamlined, just a single piece. Some people just prefer more day-to-day drop protection rather than just all-out protection. So
I'm not dirt biking with it. I'm walking to work.
Not everyone's a professional athlete, so.
For
just day-to-day drops. And now we have plenty of styles to fit your lifestyle and what you like, all your tastes.
For the audio-only listeners, we're looking at like a dark red leather. We've got geometric patterns. We've got all kinds of starry, crazy, sparkly stuff. We got cases with a little cover on it. I mean, these things are beautiful. They look really nice. They don't look like, forgive me, but they don't look like an OtterBox. They look like a really pretty glamour case, but still protects your phone.
We're really just trying to bring awareness that we do make more than just the big guy. So this is a really nice one. People like a folio case.
Yeah.
We have everything very professional, just black, slim cases. So.
All right, so now we're going to, you've got an arrangement with another company. We're going to trot down here. All right, who have we got here?
So we've actually just started a partnership with Disney. So as you know, Disney also owns Lucas Arts. So we have Star Wars cases and Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, and the classic castle.
Oh, that is so adorable. So you can be you can protect your phone, but still be adorable at the same time,
exactly.
Right? You got an R2-D2 case?
If you guys want to come over to this side, we'll show you the Star Wars cases. So whether you're a fan of the light side or the dark side, we've got everything for you, from Darth Vader to Rey from the new Star Wars, and then the classic Stormtrooper.
Oh, my gosh.
So great for kids and great for Star Wars fans.
This is fantastic. Yeah, I know my friend Pat Dengler will be buying one of these immediately.
There you go. Yeah,
great. Are these available now?
These are available now. So you can find them online at OtterBox.com or any major wireless carrier, Best Buy and Target.
So. Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much, Bo.
No
this
problem.
Is perfect.
Thank you.
All right. So Rick C. in the chat room reminded me that I really should tell you about my August smart lock. It's this really cool lock I got. I want to tell you all about it. Anyway, we've been having some fun in the chat room, that's for sure. But I think I'm going to wind us up. I know this is not the longest show, but hey, you're probably still not done listening to the show from last week, right? So then maybe that'll work out for you. So I'm going to wind us up this week. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions to email me at allison@podfeet.com. Tell me all the things I screwed up in the show this week. But do remember to start sending in things for Bart and Alistair as soon as you can so they know whether they have something as some content to help them make the shows for when we're gone. Remember, everything good starts with podfeet.com. We've got podfeet.com/Patreon, podfeet.com/Facebook, podfeet.com/Google+. We've even got podfeet.com/Wingman if you want to learn about Kevin. Anyway, there's a long story, and you got to come to the chat room to hear about that. Speaking of the chat, you can get into our Discord chat by going to podfeet.com/chat. Want to help out with the Amazon links? Go to podfeet.com/Amazon. And if you want to join in the front of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic Nosilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.